gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Google Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the tour bus of free speech because we're in here. We're on tour. We're going everywhere. We're all over. And we're speaking freely. So go to republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the donate button. Send the fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. There will be happy people who will gladly take your money. All right. Today is our Monday show. We've got with us Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's good to be here. The start of another week. We are now getting towards autumn. It won't be long before it's Christmas. I don't know where the year's gone, and there's been so much that's happened this year. But the news keeps coming thick and fast, doesn't it? We don't seem to be slowing down with that hectic news cycle.
There's all sorts of stuff going on. Wars and trannyism and mass migration over the border and old-fashioned crime of all sorts. Certain groups do a lot of crime. It's often more than 50%. You've got crime in Britain too, and you've got police, but your police typically walk around without weapons, and they have a bobby club, and they say, "What's all this then?" Right? Isn't that what happens?
Not exactly. Not exactly. But we generally, armed police are generally not a big sort of feature here in the UK. Armed police are quite rare. You are correct about that. Armed police are not a normal thing. They're a specialist unit, and police officers who carry weapons have to be licensed to carry weapons. To be an officer that carries a gun, you have to have a license. You have to be specially firearms trained. It is not something that normal officers simply do. So fundamentally, you are, some could say, in a privileged position to a degree if you are an officer that is armed. If you are a firearms officer, you are in somewhat of a more privileged position. So you could put it like that. Essentially, I'm not saying you should. But you could. And at the moment, there is a major, major issue with the firearms police or the firearms or those police officers that carry firearms. And this major issue is around London. It's part of the problem with the Metropolitan Police. Now, last September, almost a year ago, I made a video. I uploaded that to Odyssey and BitChute. It's now also on Rumble. And that video is called, and I'll get the exact title for you in case you wanted to look it up. It's called Armed Police Get a Taste of Anti-White Politics. And the little sort of stub for the video explaining what it's about read the following. The truth about the death of Chris Carver, a violent black criminal attached to an organized crime gang, and how Black Lives Matter is once again marching on Britain's streets demanding justice. But this time, the truth about the death of Chris Carver, a violent black criminal attached to an organized crime gang, and how Black Lives Matter is once again marching on Britain's streets demanding justice. But this time, the British police are on the receiving end, and senior officers are already bowing to pressure from the anti-white agitators. So essentially, there was an arrest, and during the arrest of this black criminal, this man called Chris Carver, an officer discharged his firearm, and this resulted in the death of Chris Carver. So Chris Carver died as the firearm was being discharged. He was essentially killed by a gunshot that was fired by a police officer. Now, this is very interesting because the officer in question, there was much furore at the time because obviously it was a black youth, dying at the hands of a white police officer who discharged his weapon. And what has actually happened now is that white police officer has indeed been charged with killing Chris Carver. But not just killing Chris Carver, he has been charged with what you know as first-degree murder, and what we know here as just murder. So here we have really, if you kill somebody during a violent act, you can either be charged with murder or manslaughter. Now, manslaughter is when you kill somebody, you commit a violent act and you kill somebody, and, you know, as you kill them, so you commit a violent act which wouldn't normally be thought to kill and doesn't have the intention to kill, but leads to the death of that person. So if you're fighting somebody in the street and they, you know, they come at you and you punch them in the face and they fall and they hit their head on the curb and it fractures their skull and they die, that would typically be manslaughter, because although you used a violence, although you used force, it would not usually be reasonably expected that such force would lead to that person's death. However, murder is premeditation. It's when you use force that is or would be reasonably expected to cause death, and you actually meant to. You set out with the intention of killing the person in question. So it's a much more serious charge, and it's a charge that, as I said, carries a much greater sentence, but it carries the implication of premeditation, that you were intending to kill. So the officer in this case who did kill Chris Carver by discharging his firearm has not been charged with manslaughter. This isn't a case of either accidental death or something more minor either. This is murder. The police have arrested this officer and they have charged him with murder, which suggests that that officer, or it suggests the police are going to make the case that that officer intentionally killed Chris Carver, and the intentional killing of Chris Carver was premeditated. Now, at this point, how does any armed police officer do his or her job? At this point, any armed police officer is going to struggle to do their job, especially in a city like London. And I've said this many times on the show before, but I might as well say it again so people understand what we're talking about. London is a city where white people white Britons are already a minority. So only 37% of the population in London are now white British. So if you're a white British officer and you are, you might be, how can I say it, disproportionately arresting people of a certain ethnic group, you are now placed in a position where fundamentally you can't do your job. And if you are going to do your job, you are likely to face prosecution. Because if a black man pulls a gun on you, or a black man drives a car at you, or pulls a knife and starts coming towards you, and you discharge your weapon, that is a case where you could end up not just losing your job, because officers can lose their jobs for these things, and for most people, the idea of losing their livelihood would be bad enough. But this isn't a case of just an officer losing their livelihood. This is a case of an officer potentially spending what could be a life sentence in jail for, the premeditated killing of a criminal. And to make the assumption that officers are leaving their, the police station, and they're heading out with sort of a premeditation aimed at murdering black people, that's an incredible allegation to make about serving police officers, especially the serving police officers in London. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, when all the Black Lives Matter stuff was kicking off, you must remember police officers in London, because we talked about it, they were taking the knee. They were actively supporting BLM. They were like, yep, we're down with this. We're on board with this. But here we are now, the same officers, maybe not exactly the same officers, but officers from the Metropolitan Police who took the knee for BLM, were involved in the arrest of a known violent criminal with a history of violence and serious violence involving guns. And this officer is now facing, a murder trial. And such is the feeling of the anger from normal officers about this, that more than 100 armed officers, and I said that wouldn't see much in America because all your officers are armed. But here in the UK, where only a minority of officers carry firearms, to have 100 armed officers within the Metropolitan Police all handing in their license to bear arms and saying, look, we're just not willing to do this anymore, that is, to say the least, absolutely incredible. That is something that's unprecedented. And because of that, there is a knock-on effect. And that is that they are calling in the British Army to police the streets of London because they don't have enough armed officers to do it. So this is something which takes us further down that road of what I call multicultural tyranny, where we all lose our rights, where we're all placed into a position where fundamentally the government takes away more and more of our rights, and we end up living in sort of a militarized, and that's where we are going, a militarized police state, which is very, very scary. You know, the idea that now we are going to end up with these members of the armed forces essentially policing our streets because law and order has broken down to such a degree that the police themselves are absolutely terrified to engage with black criminals. It's frightening.
Well, we've had a development in the past week, too, in this same area. So the state of Illinois, which is one of the largest states, where Chicago is, they have a governor who's a member of a certain tribe, which has a lot of money. His name's Pritzker. He's from the family, one of America's 10 richest families, according to Forbes magazine. And the family, they used to own the Hyatt hotel chain. I'm not sure what they own now. They sold that to Warren Buffett's group. But the governor's a Pritzker, and he, under his leadership, Illinois just eliminated cash bail for criminals. So you can be arrested for most crimes, even felonies. And they'll arrest you, they'll book you, and then they let you go and say, please show up. We're going to have a trial, and please show up. Which is the same thing, of course, that they do with illegal aliens crossing the border. They catch them, and they say, hey, can you show up? We'd appreciate it if you showed up in a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, and we'll see whether you know, we're going to let you stay here or not. So they've eliminated cash bail. The first, that was just over the past week. And the very first test case of this, there was Mexican Independence Day a while, I guess over the past week, I don't know. And in Chicago, a lot of people don't know this because it didn't used to be like this, but getting close to something like close to a third of the population is Hispanic, largely Mexican. They're pretty recent arrivals for the most part. And so they had their independence parties, and you had people fighting each other with machetes and whatnot, just celebrating Mexicans' rich cultural heritage. And I, you know, there were videos. I saw the police just be really hands off with these people who were fighting, even the guy with the machete. But there was one woman who pepper sprayed police, and four of them wound up going to the hospital. And so this woman was arrested, but of course, then she just, she's booked, and then she's let out. So now you've got in Chicago, you've got this precedent where, people, in this case, it was Mexicans, not blacks, but they literally can attack police and, they're just let off, you know? So maybe there'll be a trial. Maybe she'll show up for trial. And maybe, you know, she'll get a penalty then, but there's no, who knows? So we are going to a lawless society. There's been all sorts of other stuff. And the criminals seem to be getting the message. You've had some amazing video come out over the past week, one of which was in Las Vegas, where you had some teens. They were speaking black English. I'm not sure one of them might have been Hispanic or something, but they had stolen a car and they're going for a joyride in a stolen car, having a good time playing bumper cars with other cars, you know, smashing into other cars while they're driving. Then they saw a bicyclist, thought, oh, this will be great fun, got behind him, and then floored it, pedal to the metal, and hit the bicyclist, killing him, and they drove off laughing. But they were live streaming it the whole time because, you know, why not? Well, they did get arrested, but you had another video with a black guy on a bicycle who's driving along and just kind of does an execution style murder on some white guy, and he drives off and he's not going to get caught. So our cities have become increasingly lawless. It's very, very disconcerting. And of course the lawlessness doesn't stay in these cities because people can move around. There's one last video that emerged in the past week of an older man, and he was driving home from the bank to his nice North Dallas suburban neighborhood. And this was all, I guess he has a doorbell camera or something, a security camera on his house. So you see him pull into his driveway. And then immediately there was an SUV. These three blacks jump out of they park the SUV in front of his driveway, I guess in order to block him in, and they jump out and start banging on his windows, and they're all armed with guns. And he manages to drive off between the SUV and another parked car, managed to get through a hole. But there's just increasing, and this is in broad daylight on a suburban street in a nice neighborhood. So we've got this increasing lawlessness, which you mentioned all the Black Lives Matter, the officialdom has sanctioned their cause, and their cause is just safer working conditions for black criminals. That's what Black Lives Matter's, that's their mission statement. And how can you look at this as anything other than state sponsored terrorism against the population, in particular against the white population?
Well, I agree, and I'll start by saying, in response to what you've said about state terrorism against white people, this is what I call multicultural tyranny, and I've taken that from the term anarcho-tyranny, because the idea of anarcho-tyranny is the state creates anarchy and then solves that anarchy with a tyrannical system of governance, and the people accept the tyrannical system of governance because they want to stop the anarchy. They want to ensure that they're safe. So they will let go of all of their rights in order to ensure that. But this isn't anarcho-tyranny. This is multicultural tyranny, because it's multiculturalism that has created these conditions. And very interestingly, what we're seeing in both the United States and the United Kingdom is the same thing. We're seeing a system whereby we are losing our rights, and our once high-trust, high-IQ societies are being transformed into places where white people are just terrified to walk the streets. They're terrified to defend themselves. They can't rely in any way upon organs of the state to protect them. And eventually, we will see, I think, a complete militarization of the police force, similar to what you would see in places like Mexico, where they're dealing with, you know, the immense drug problems they have in Mexico, the immense gang problems that, you know, revolves around the very, very lucrative drug trade. But I think we're having the same thing here. We're going to end up just like they have in Mexico, where often entire police precincts or police districts or whatever they're called there.
I I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop and lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop and lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Easeoff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
I think they're having the same thing here. We're going to end up just like they have in Mexico, where often entire police precincts or police districts or whatever they're called there get told, you know, you're standing down, and then are just replaced with the Mexican army. And I think we could see the same here. I think we could see, you know, basically the military policing London. And this isn't good. This isn't good for British people, because it's a sort of a tacit admission that things have gone so far that they can't be contained any longer by the normal rule of law and order. You know, what Britons accepted as law and order at one point were unarmed police officers who would very much play a guiding role in society. They would arrest people, they would be a deterrent for the small number of criminals that were operating. But most importantly, police officers in the UK would be very much hands off. If they saw things going wrong, they would start by speaking to people. You know, if a few youths were messing around, they'd grab them by the scruff of their neck and march them back to their fathers, who would then do the disciplining. But now all of that is gone. All of those old ways that the British people enjoyed for dozens or maybe even hundreds of years are going. We are not having that anymore. What we are having is a situation where fundamentally white British people are going to be exposed to a way of life that they or their ancestors have never seen before, or would be completely alien to both them and their ancestors. And this is ushered in by multiculturalism. It is multiculturalism that has brought this problem here. It's multiculturalism that has created this. And this is directly downstream of that. And we will end up losing all of our rights, and I mean all of our rights, to this multicultural tyranny in order just to feel safe and protected. And it's very, very worrying. My other great worry with this is white police officers. It's white police officers, I should imagine, that they're handing in their weapons or their licenses to bear arms. But what does that eventually mean? Who will those white armed police officers be replaced with? Will they be permanently replaced by the army? Is the army even, you know, if you like, a permanent strategy? Could the army be a permanent strategy? Well, I would say no. I would say it would be very odd to view the army in this case as a permanent strategy. And you might be thinking, well, if the army aren't the permanent strategy, who is the permanent strategy? Well, the answer to that is quite simple. It is a complete replacement of armed white officers with armed non-white officers.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a major shift, because then what you're creating is essentially a militarized and armed police force that is completely staffed by people who aren't of European descent. They're not white and British, who will then have the power to police white Britons. And that, my friend, is probably the most worrying thing. That is a situation where it's pretty much unthinkable. But if you think back to COVID, and COVID wasn't that far back, but if you do think back to the COVID pandemic, in places like London, who were actually employed to police the COVID restrictions? Who was employed to police those COVID restrictions? Well, in many cases, it was migrants. It was people who were foreign to this country, and because of that, they felt more morally able to come down harshly upon Indigenous Britons for simply exercising their rights, going for a walk, going for a jog. Because that is the way people think. Now, if you come from a community, so let's just think about this now. If there's a little, you know, town in England, and the police officers come from that town, they grow up around the people in that town, they have ties to that town, they know everybody, they know all of their friends' children are the ones that are playing in the parks, that are running through the streets. It's their friends that they're policing. It's their families that they're policing. They are much more likely to police in a hands-off and compassionate manner. Now, imagine if you went to those police officers who had been born and raised in that town and were friends with everyone, knew all the children, were friends with the mums and dads, had grown up playing in the gardens of the people who are now pensioners. And you said to those police officers, you've now got to act in an utterly brutal manner towards the people in that town and police them as harshly as possible. Most wouldn't do it. Most wouldn't feel morally able to do it because they had a connection to the community. Now, if you shipped in a group of people who are completely foreign and alien to that town, they have no connection, no moral or spiritual connection to the town, they haven't grown up around the people, they weren't friends with the people, those people to them were, as I said, just alien. Well, I'll tell you what, those aliens who had taken over the police force would be far...
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau d'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. Or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Friends with the people. Those people to them were, as I said, just alien. Well, I'll tell you what, those aliens who had taken over the police force would be far more able and willing to police that town in a brutal and harsh manner, because they wouldn't see the people in the same way as the old police force, that had grown up in the town and had a connection to the people of the town. And this is one of my big worries, that this will see a huge purging of the Metropolitan Police's ranks, and the ranks will be refilled with people who aren't indigenous to these islands. Those people will then become the next generation of firearms officers. And how will that leave the remaining white people living in London? Mm-hmm. Because I'll tell you this now, I think if you're a white shop owner and you're being robbed or brutalized by a migrant gang, and you call the police and the police come out and they're migrants, are they more likely then to take the side of the group brutalizing the shop owner? Well, potentially, yes. And I think that's the worry.
Right. You know, in the United States, so we've currently... You could look at the military, you can look at the police force, but you look at the military, we've got this black Secretary of Defense, and within a couple of weeks, we're going to have a black Chief of Staff. The Secretary of Defense has, he hasn't been involved in this war, this Ukraine war very much. He seems to have been brought in order to promote anti-white indoctrination of the military. So you've got critical race theory and whatnot being taught to all officers, for sure. And a week ago or so, I was talking to a military. So you've got that. A week or so ago, I was talking to a military friend of mine, ex-military, but he still works in the Pentagon as a consultant, who seems convinced that that Russia is our ultimate enemy and we're beating them in this war. And I told him, you know, you've been in the military so long. What you fail to understand is we don't have a country. It's not our military. And you've just internalized Jewish enemies. And so there's these problems with people like white men like him joining the military and then being indoctrinated and adopting the priorities of the Jewish rulers of the United States as if it's their own priorities. But, you know, then you've got the problem of whites being purged from the military, and then who's going to be left? And I made the comment on last week on one of the shows with Jeremy, and I said, you know, if there's one thing worse than white men joining the military, it's white men not joining the military. You know, kind of like Oscar Wilde said about this, there's one thing worse than being talked about, it's not being talked about. But that's the situation. We've got a police force, and I know you've been a critic of the police. The police force, which in the United States, it's already, you know, not necessarily that white, but we've got a police force that can be a problem. We've got a military that's a problem, but it seems as if no matter what happens, things are just going to get worse. I don't know. There's no good. There seems to be, like, at least for the military, because none of the wars we've fought are worth fighting. And so there's a problem with people joining the military and fighting these wars on behalf of interests that aren't ours. But then on the other hand, if they don't join, then there's a military that is going to be doing the same. Well, they might be fighting wars. Maybe they will be fighting the wars less effectively, but maybe they'll just be fighting the war at home, which is the war against white people. So it's really tough. There's a lot of people who say that people, we shouldn't be supporting the police at all. We shouldn't be joining the police. But then you create a vacuum there, and who's going to fill it? So what would you recommend, Mark?
Well, it's hard to recommend anything in these cases because you're sort of damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So if I say now, do you know what we need? We need white men, and we need them all joining the police force. And if white men join the police force, we're in a position where we might be slightly better off. Because if these white men all join the police force and they all take positions of power, they might treat us slightly better in the future if they're policing us. And we might at least then get some representation in the police force. And that, look, I can see that as a very legitimate point of view. I'm not saying it is the de facto point of view, but it is a legitimate point of view. And it's certainly an interesting take. But at the same time, if we say to white people, go into the police force, are they going to be treated well? Are they going to get anywhere in the police force? Are they going to become indoctrinated and become our enemies? I don't know. Now, on one hand, I've got to say, to see, and increasingly as well, when you advocate for the police, you are advocating for a group that spends a vastly disproportionate amount of its time, you know, sat online, basically monitoring the internet and cracking down, so to speak, on people like myself or you, or, you know, anyone that's got the wrong opinions. So actually advocating for the police force is a difficult thing to do. It's not easy. It's not a matter. We're not talking about a police force like we had decades ago or even centuries ago. We're talking about a corrupt police force that has already done an awful lot of damage to British people. So it was white police officers that covered up the grooming gangs. It was white police officers who have accepted many of these anti-white changes. Now, I've got to say this. In some ways, I see this almost like the chickens coming home to roost, and part of me just wants to say, ha ha, I told you so. Because how many times have white police officers gone and knocked on somebody's door for a social media post? How many times have white police officers turned up and basically, you know, arrested somebody for saying a word or even looking at somebody the wrong way? You know, that is where we are now. You know, we're already at a point where fundamentally white people are treated absolutely appallingly by the system. And that system is at the moment still a white system. So should I actually have, you know, should I actually have any sympathy for these officers? I don't know. I mean, on one hand, you want to say, well, yeah, look, we've got to get in there. We've got to get stuck in. We've got to help these white officers. We've got to ensure that white officers aren't completely screwed over. We've got to stand by our guys and we've got to say, we're there for you. You know, it's time you as white officers, stand up for us a little bit and we'll all work together and we'll get through this and we've got to stop this anti-whitism and all that stuff. You know, you want to say that. You want to stand up for these people in many senses. But at the same time, have those white officers been standing up for us? By us, I mean us as a collective group, not you and I, but us as in the white people of this country. You know, where were these white officers? Where were these white officers when, you know, we were experiencing this grooming scandal? Where were these white officers when, you know, women were getting dragged out of their homes in the middle of the night for misgendering somebody? What, now they want our support? Now we should be bouncing around and go, yeah, we're here for you guys. We're going to help you. We're going to help you because you've been so damn good to us. You've been so damn good to us that we're absolutely, absolutely desperate to come to your aid. Because I'm not. I'm not desperate to come to their aid. And I'm not saying that to be, just to be needlessly bitchy or to, be, you know, sort of be a contrarian or just have a go at the police in general. I'm saying this because I'm giving you an absolutely God's honest take on this issue. You know, this issue is one where the white serving police officers have already done a huge amount of damage to the indigenous people. And can we just sweep that under the carpet now and jump to their defense? I don't know if we can. I don't know if we should. I don't think we should. And if you're a white officer who's been in the police force and you have fundamentally worked to cover up sort of sex crimes against white British children, why should we, as white people, look at that and forgive it?
Mm-hmm. Well, so I don't know. There's a... what we do have to do is have a comprehensive and accurate description of what's going on, accurate critique. And, you know, the police in America, in the United States, police are locally controlled, and police forces in some areas can be extremely different from police forces in other areas. And then in some areas where it's more rural, there might not be much of a police force. You might be talking about sheriffs, and sheriffs is a kind of a different institution because the sheriff is typically an elected office. And so you've got, in some areas, the sheriffs are more responsive to the people because they're elected by the people. I don't know. Of course, chiefs of police are appointed by mayors, and the mayors themselves are elected. But regardless of all that, it is a situation where you don't feel like jumping to the defense of the police officers because they've been part of the problem. At the same time, you know, in this case, who's on the other end of the equation is black criminals. And lawless society. We don't want a lawless society. We don't want to further enable black criminals. And so, you know, you have that situation that we have here. So it's tough. And like I said, if there's one thing worse than white men, I don't know. If there's one thing worse than supporting the police, it's supporting the criminals. It's really a difficult situation. How on earth did we get here in the first place? Well, I mean, we know it's just been a long process. But I have one more question. So I heard Alexander Mercurius the other day, who apparently he's from Greece. He must be in his 60s, and he was talking about coming to the UK, I guess as a child from Greece in 1968. He remembers coming, and he remembers the Britain that he came to, and he was saying on his show a day or two ago that Britain just doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist. And I used to watch a lot of Monty Python or The Saint with Roger Moore, and those are all fictionalized portrayals of British society, but it was very, very different. And at the start of the show, I said something about British cops saying, "What's all this then?" Which is what they always said on Monty Python, "What's all this then?" And so 40 years ago, 35 years ago, I know you're not old enough to remember 50 years ago, but was it different? How, I mean, when did this really, really start in Britain?
I would say the big changes started post-Second World War. You can see that post-Second World War, that there was this major sea change in the way that Britain was governed, and the general morality within Britain. And this isn't a sea change that's just racial. I'm not just talking about the obvious visual demographic changes that have taken place. I'm talking about a complete alteration of the way people thought, the way people behaved, the way people acted, their morality, their way of just everything about British society began to change after the Second World War. This was all absolutely engineered. And the Britain that we saw pre-World War II was very, very quickly erased. And most of this was sold to white Britons on the idea that it was progressive, that it was forward-thinking, it was forward-looking, and this was going to bring about some kind of liberal utopia where people would be more free, people would have more rights, where people would basically be able to enjoy themselves more, where life would be better for everyone. It's going to usher in this better world. And I think in some ways you've got to say that people saw their lifestyles improving. So there was an improvement to a degree in people's lifestyles. People had a better quality of life in terms of income. Technology made things easier for people. And because of those issues, other things have been accepted. So looking up, you know, going from sort of the 1940s to sort of the 1980s, you have to say the quality of life in Britain did improve. You know, people had more disposable income, people were living longer, they were probably working less, and the work they were doing was far less difficult or less dangerous. And these things make people think, well, things are improving. You know, we've got this improvement. We've got more disposable income. So my grandparents' generation, you know, many of those didn't own, many people in that generation never owned their own houses. They never had a motor car. If they went abroad, it was usually because they were a member of the armed services and they'd fought in the Second World War. Most people didn't take foreign holidays. Yet by the 1980s, you were looking at houses with two cars on the drive, people owning their own owning their own homes for the first time. You saw people who'd grown up on council estates buying their own properties, taking holidays abroad. But I think people were fooled into accepting much of this by this ever-increasing, you know, technological advancements and quality of life that allowed people to overlook the problems that were slowly building up. Because whilst people did have more money and probably a better quality of life and were doing things that their parents or grandparents...
From beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
That allowed people to overlook the problems that were slowly building up. Because whilst people did have more money and probably a better quality of life and were doing things that their parents or grandparents never did, we were also experiencing mass immigration. We were also experiencing a moral decay. We were also seeing the death of the traditional family. So now that traditional family structure has been in existence for thousands of years, is basically gone. And people have given up on many of these things because of the way that certain aspects of their life have improved. And I think that's a trade-off. And people in the nationalist movement obviously often say that the only thing left holding our society together is bread and circuses. And if people weren't so well fed and weren't so well entertained, we would be in a position where maybe people were more likely to wake up and do things or do something about the situation that we're in. So, as I say, I do think there has been this sort of unfortunate playoff that has kept people asleep whilst the worst changes that's ever taken place in this country have taken place. But the bread and circuses have kept people asleep. They've kept people smiling inanely as terrible things happen. But now we may finally be reaching the end of that road, because quality of life is falling. You know, for the first time in many generations, the children born today or the people who are having children today are going to be poorer than their parents. And then, you know, the next generation will be poorer than their parents and their grandparents, and they'll be living in worse conditions. Things will be overcrowded, unclean. There'll be these problems with policing that we've been discussing today. Obviously, the demographic changes, the violence, the lack of civil rights and freedom of speech, the freedom of association, all of those things will be gone, and children will be brought up in a markedly worse world. You know, that cycle of improvements, which have probably, as I said, offset the other issues that we speak about, they will no longer exist. And at that point, we start lurching towards a, you know, completely, if you want to call it, maybe even a managed decline of our whole civilization.
Well, that's pretty bleak, but we're up at the end of our time. Hey, who do you have joining you on your shows today, this week, including Dr. Duke's show?
I have multiple guests. It's going to be a selection of different guests for my show, Patriotic Weekly Review. I'll be looking forward to welcoming David Clues from Unity News Network. And on Friday, I have the lovely Laura Towler on from Patriotic Alternative. So she will be coming on to be discussing with me some of the things that we've been doing here in the UK recently in terms of political activism and different outreaches to different communities to create and grow our community-based group.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.